Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Monday, September 13th, as our friend Bill Katz has often told us over the years that after Labor Day is when politics gets a little intense. Well, there's a lot of intense politics going on in the country today. The vaccine mandates becoming very controversial, 9-11 plus 20. Senator Manchin appears to be breaking with the Democrats big time. We here in Texas are now the targets of a couple of Department of Justice judicial attacks, if I could put it that way. Afghanistan, California recall, 2022 projections, lots of things to get into with our friend Bill. So let me welcome you aboard, Bill. This is going to be a fun program because we have a lot to talk about, Bill.
Oh, a great deal to talk about, and it's going to be a fun and very intense political year. You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that the political year really begins after Labor Day. Historically, that was true, and it began after Labor Day in the year of the election, and the campaign would then last a few months. Now it's after Labor Day in the year before the election.
That's
because
right.
Our campaigns have lasted so long. I don't know how good or bad that is. I don't think there's really a way to judge. But the 2022 campaigns are underway, and the Republicans are optimistic. I hope they're not too optimistic. I think it's going to be a very bitter fight, despite predictions that the Democratic Party is falling apart. It falls apart, but it brings out its falling apart constituency on Election Day. And our side has to fight as if we were 20 points behind, which is the right way to conduct any campaign.
That's right. And there's a couple of signs coming up. One is in California, where there's a recall this week, and that's starting to look more and more like Newsom is going to hold on to his job. But everybody I talk to in California, Bill, tells me that it's 50-50, that there could be a surprise. And interesting, the surprise could very well come from Latinos, who apparently are not too happy.
Yes.
And so that we'll keep an eye on that. I really don't know what's going to happen. I mean, if I had to bet money, and I usually don't, but if I had to bet a cup of coffee, I probably would say that Newsom is going to keep his job, but at the same time, everybody out there is telling me be ready for a surprise, so we'll see. And the other big test of all of this, which perhaps is a better test of the mood of the country, is what's happening in Virginia. There's an election there that is right now too close to call, and that, I think, is the real test. If that goes the GOP way, then I think you know, that might be the sign that of things to come. You know, back in 2009, that was the first election that went against President Obama, and then it all started to fall apart after that, leading to that big 2010 election. So we'll see. I mean, I agree with you. I think it's too early to forecast. I honestly don't know what to make of these polls because they've disappointed me so many times that I'm skeptical by nature of polling data, Bill.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point because the polling in California is overwhelmingly pro-Newsom. I mean, it isn't even close. The side that favors his removal has never been ahead in any poll, and they got the issue on the ballot. But the spread was very small at first, and it's gotten larger and larger in favor of Newsom. I don't know if those polls are accurate. We won't know until Election Day. I hope there is a surprise, and I've read the same material you have, that the Hispanic community in California is very disappointed in Newsom. I think that itself is a very interesting point, because nationally we see the same thing, that
right.
The Latino community is moving to the right. which would seem to be logical given the fact of how it's treated by the Democratic Party. That they just use the community as for votes on Election Day and then never do anything for it. And maybe other communities are seeing the same thing. In California, the state is falling apart. It's in terrible condition. It really is. It's in terrible condition.
Mm-hmm.
The most creative people are leaving. The educational system has really fallen under the sway of the hard left. And yet Newsom says, keep me in power. Well, they may keep him in power, and they may pay the price. But it's an out-migration state. People are leaving California as they are leaving New York.
Right. No, I think, in fact, there's a gentleman at our church who's become a good friend of him. He and his wife have become good family friends. And he lives here now, has a business here in Texas. He lived in California for 50 years. And he came out here for business. And he told me that he wouldn't go back. You know, he says, I wouldn't live back there. He says, they've destroyed the state. And this is a fellow from California who, has all his loyalties to the sports, California teams. I'll make you happy. He's not a Dodger fan. But so you'll like him. But he's more of a Northern California guy. He's a Giants fan. But still, I mean, the point is that he confirmed that the state is a disaster. He says everything is falling apart. And all you got to do is follow the news. So we'll see what happens in the recall. I'm actually more optimistic about Virginia than I am about California. I mean, if I wake up Wednesday morning and Newsom is out, it'll be very good news. But I don't think that's going to happen. At least I'll go to bed thinking that that was all a good effort. But Virginia, it's a different story. That I do think would happen. But before we get to all these stories, though, I do want to bring up one story that I don't know when this came out, but you posted about this a few days ago, and that is the National Archives. And I guess that's the bureaucracy that keeps track of the documents or whatever they do. And they put a little flag, next to some of our country's documents, flagging them, I guess, for not being, woke enough. And when I saw that on Urgent Agenda, you wrote about that, I got furious with the National Archives. And I said to myself, here's a great opportunity, Bill, for the President of the United States, who desperately needs something to go right, for him to go on TV and say, this is crazy. Everyone, either they change this or all of those bureaucrats are going to get fired. So to do what Reagan did back in 81 with the air controllers. I mean, put it on the line and say, hey, I cannot accept this. I think that would be a popular move because I think most people would agree with it, but this is crazy. The National Archives, I mean, exactly what in the heck is going on in the country when they're flagging the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence for not being woke? I mean, what's wrong with these people, Bill?
Well, apparently the National Archives has a division which is supposed to enforce ideas of inclusion and diversity, the usual cliches that we're getting in society today. And they have on their own decided to flag the documents that founded our country and which have provided the basis of freedom in our country as controversial and which documents that may give offense to some people. Well, maybe they do, but you don't have to put a flag next to it. If they'll give offense, they'll give offense. But, I mean, really insulting to the very foundations of the American Republic. Those documents were brilliant. They were not perfect. They were changed. The Constitution has been amended more than 20 times. One can question certain logic in the Declaration of Independence, but they were brilliantly done documents and documents that have always saved us in times of stress and have always served as the foundation for advancing freedom. Whenever freedom is advanced in America, there is a reference to the Constitution as justifying it and encouraging it. And to put an insulting sign next to those documents saying, well, some people may not agree because we have never really perfected our country, and we have never fulfilled the promise of these documents, or whatever language they have used, should be reversed immediately by the President of the United States. But it has not been, because he is very much influenced by the very hard left that controls a good part of the Democratic Party. And I think it's just another insult. Now, what has to be done now is that our side has got to make a lot of noise about this until those signs are removed. And they haven't so far. You know, my concern about the next election is that the Democratic Party will be woke and the Republican Party will be asleep, because it has a, you know, it, as I've said many times, it works hard to lose elections. And they should have been on this immediately, and an uproar should be created, because it is insulting to the American people.
Absolutely. I thought this was absolutely crazy. You know, you can go back to the civil rights movement. Well, I'm sure you're very familiar with that movement. How often Martin Luther King would use the Declaration of Independence. I mean, it was the Constitution that ended slavery, after all. It was the Constitution that gave, identity, legal identity to the black slaves after the Civil War. And it was the Constitution that gave women the right to vote. So, yeah, they were not included in 1776. I think we all know that. But I'd like to know what legal document in 1776 included women, Bill. I don't really, you know, I'm not a history expert, but I don't think too many did, Bill.
No. These are ideas that evolved over time. Description of slaves as four-fifths of a human being in the Constitution is clearly unacceptable, but it was written in that period and then later corrected in the course of American history, and it was the Constitution that provided the mechanism for the corrections. And this is something called presentism that exists in history and history departments sometimes, judging the past by present standards. It's illegitimate. It is insulting to the intelligence of people, and I think the president could, as you say, help himself politically and help himself really idealistically if he would simply order the National Archives to take down that sign. They fall under his authority because they are part of the executive department. But
he's going to force him to get vaccinated and wear a mask. But he's not going to say anything to them about these documents. I think he fell short, Bill. And this is a huge mistake, I think.
This
is a great opportunity for President Biden to show us how moderate he is. I mean, he was supposed to be the moderate. Well, show me, President Biden.
Well, absolutely, but it's going to take a question at a news conference to get this going, and we haven't heard that question yet. I hope it comes from Fox News. It probably will, because the others are too afraid. But somebody must ask the president directly, why aren't you doing anything about this?
That's right. No, I hope it happens, too, to me. I hope it comes from somebody else other than Fox News. I mean, this is such an obvious – I mean, this is not a political thing for me. This is just common sense, and, you know – whatever they call it, I call it, maybe I'm being too cynical, but I think we have a bunch of people who are infiltrating our colleges, our institutions, and these people hate the country and they want to destroy it, Bill. They don't admit that publicly,
that's right.
But that's what I think it is, Bill.
Well, I think it is too, and I think it's pretty obvious that this is what they want to do. They don't like America, and I'm sorry to say that included a former president named Obama, who made clear his contempt for the American people. And they do. They don't believe. They refer to the Constitution as something written by dead white men, which itself is a degrading and insulting comment. In the America of 1776, we were not involved with diversity. Yes, it is true that they were all men, and yes, it is true they were all white, and yes, it is true that they were all members of Christian sects, and I think even Jefferson was a deist, but I guess you would call him a Christian. And yet the people down through the years in our country, as they have come to America as immigrants, have accepted those documents, even though they weren't, quote, represented in their writing. Mm-hmm. You know, I fully concede that there are people not of my group who do intelligent things. I don't have to always be represented there. I mean, the arguments have reached absurd levels, and I think that there have been some columnists recently who pointed that out, Andrew Sullivan and others, who have at times been critical of American policies, that enough is enough, that this has gone much too far. I think the National Archives move is indicative of that, and I'm hoping for a backlash. We have had some indication that a backlash is building. It depends on the size of the backlash and where it is. But I think Americans are probably fed up. Biden's poll numbers are down. There is also, I think very interestingly, a belief that it seems to be spreading throughout the country that the economy is really not very good. And if he fails on the economy, the Democrats, or rather the Republicans, can have a washout year next year and really take back great power. That is not a guarantee.
Right. No, well, I guess nothing is this far ahead. But, I mean, I guess if you're the Republican, I mean, if you're a year, a year and 2 months, whatever, 14 months. I mean, I'd rather be in the Republican position today than the Democrat position 14 months away. But you're right. So many things can happen. So many things can go one way or the other. But I like the Republican position at the moment. Well, one of the big issues this week, Bill, was the president going on television. And again, I don't know how he practices these speeches. But if I was him, if I was an advisor, I would say, President Biden, please calm down. You know, don't sound that way. He did it in the Afghanistan speech, and he does it again. The presentation is out of an angry man, and I don't think that works.
Yes.
Maybe that works in a high school football coach who may get angry at halftime because his team is not playing. Okay, maybe in that setting it works, but not in the president of the United States. You want to have a calm figure. And now he's talking about vaccine mandates. I guess he can do it in the public sector. I don't know that he can do it in the private sector. But either way, he's going to get into a fight with the states. And it seems to me it's counterproductive because more people are going to reject the mandates now because the president came out for it. Had he simply given a speech like this, Bill, something like, well, you know, my fellow Americans, you know, we faced a difficult crisis with this Delta, whatever it's called, and I'm going to urge all of you, really deeply from my heart, urge all of you to wear a mask and take the vaccine, and please encourage your friends to do it. Had he done that, I think he'd be a lot better political, because he wouldn't have created all this terrible division, Bill.
Yes, and all he had to do was also say, please see your doctor. Get your doctor's advice, because it does seem a little unseemly for the president to be giving medical advice. But that's all he has to say. You know, he can say, we understand there may be some cases where it's not appropriate, but it's appropriate for the great majority of the people. But see, get your physician's advice and please get vaccinated. That's fine. I mean, now it is true and has to be conceded that the country has a history of mandatory vaccinations in schools. Students to go into most schools, I believe, in America to enter have to have, quote, their shots, as they say, you know, for smallpox and tetanus and other things. When you travel overseas, I don't know if this is still the requirement, but I know the last time we were overseas, which was a long time ago, you, quote, got your shots to travel to other countries, and those countries mandated it. So we do have that history. However, in this particular case, where you have a pandemic and a brand new vaccine, which has only been on trial for 6 months or so, there may be some reluctance. That reluctance can be overcome. But I think the idea of mandating things like this in private society and forcing, I mean, now schools in some areas, Los Angeles, are forcing, going to force kids to get a vaccine, even though they're not at any particular risk, I think that is going much too far and creates a kind of totalitarian atmosphere where none has existed. He does have this way of being tone deaf and of not seeming to understand the right thing to do at the right time. You know, this is absolutely shocking. I read it over the weekend, And again, it was something that seems to have gotten lost. Maybe it will be found during the week. But the White House has issued an edict that any veteran who does not get his shots cannot be treated at a veterans hospital. Now, that's outrageous. I mean, that is absolutely outrageous. That is a right they have under American law. And to say that we will not extend that right to you if you don't get your shots is disgraceful. That veteran going to the hospital may have something far more serious or more serious concerns, or maybe suffering from chest pains or something that could indicate an emergency. That's just the kind of thing you don't do. I mean, why is it necessary to punish, to present this as a form of punishment? It really isn't.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think that so often it is the tone of the president that sort of sets the tone, if I could put it that way. And when you sound like he did, it's got to turn off a lot of people, including Democrats. The other thing, Bill, if I was advising this president, I would say, can you please give shorter speeches? Because he's not good. The Afghanistan speech went on forever. This one went on forever. And I'm sitting there saying, you could have said this in 10 or 15 minutes and be a lot more, I guess, be better. I don't know. There's something wrong with how he delivers these speeches. And he's in for a big fight with the states. And I actually agree. I mean, I know that he can tell people in the public sector to do this. But I think he doesn't have the, to my knowledge, and Alan Dershowitz, who knows a lot more than I do, says that he doesn't think he can do it with the private sector. He can suggest, but he's not going to be able to do it. And if all of a sudden companies begin rebelling against these mandates, he's got a bigger problem than Bill.
He does. And also, I think that as people start, getting hurt, people in the federal service, nurses, I know that there are some hospitals in which a lot of nurses don't want to take the vaccine. I don't know why, but I'd love somebody to report the story and tell us why these nurses are rebelling against the vaccine. And these nurses are being laid off. I don't know who replaces them. These things all come with a price, and we're not being told the price. One of the elements here that we find in other stories as well is the laxness of the press, or even the absolute hostility of the press to human freedom and even to inquiry. You're not supposed to ask. You just do what you're told. The press is supposed to act as our guardian. That is not a role it is taking on today. It's taking on the role more of propagandist on behalf of certain causes. So this will play out over a period of months. I don't know how it will play out. No, nobody does. Mm-hmm. There are apparently new variants that have been appearing along the way. There are new vaccines coming. I know that was it Pfizer who said that they are working on a vaccine that will be a one shot and also include the flu vaccine in the same shot. That sounds interesting. We really just have to wait and see. But the administration has botched this, even though just a few months ago the president was winning public approval for his COVID-19 policy. That seems to have ended, and now people are becoming increasingly skeptical. And I think that skepticism will increase. The polls are turning against the president, as you know, and they're also turning against the notion that America is on the right track. The old right track, wrong track question has always been a pretty good predictor of what actually happens in elections. But, as we've said on this program, a year and 2 months is a long time, and that's the time to the 22 elections, and anything can happen, including an international crisis.
Right. Yeah, there's so many things. I mean, so many balls up in the air right now that you're right. I wouldn't want to make too many predictions 14 months in the future. The only thing I'll say, I'll just repeat what I said before. I'd rather have the Republican position right now than the Democrat position, because it seems to me that there are more balls in the air that could hurt the Democrats at this point. That's the only way I can put it. But I'll say one last thing, and then we'll take a break. I think the country – okay, I shouldn't say that. I cannot speak for the country. I can only speak for me and the people that I interact with. I think everybody's sick and tired of having to live inside a bubble, that you can't go outside, that you can't go to a ball game. I mean, people are saying, look, I understand the risk and I'll take care of myself. But we can't go on like this where every 6 months there's a new variant and every 6 months there's a new vaccine. I mean, how many vaccines are we supposed to take, Bill?
That's right. And, you know, isn't it interesting that we hold in contempt people who don't get their COVID shot, even though we don't know their personal circumstances? And yet, how many people have ever asked you, have you gotten your flu vaccine? And if you're not, if you didn't, you can't come in here. I've never heard of that.
Right.
I mean, the flu is really a much more widespread disease. It kills thousands of people a year, especially older people. And yet, I've never heard of lockdowns because of the flu. I've never heard of schools being closed because of the flu. Maybe it has happened a few times. I don't know. But when it comes to COVID, anything goes, any restriction goes. And without even asking the question, what are the mental health effects of all this? They have to be great, especially
among
children.
I'm sure they are. I mean, you're seeing it in children. I heard a story, a family that we know quite well. They have a little boy who, you know, was having trouble talking. And part of the problem is that wearing a mask and going to school apparently didn't, you know, the boy didn't develop his social skills. And I can see that happening to a lot of kids because school, you know, school is about learning how to read and write, obviously, but it's also about, you know, socializing with other kids. And you miss that if you're sitting in front of a computer doing your schoolwork. I think you've got to be in that classroom and interacting with the other kids. So I think the country's tired of it, but judging by other countries, they're also tired of it. And judging by the crowds at the football games this weekend, they're tired of it too. It seems like the country wants to get back to life, Bill.
I think that's true. And I think what is especially stunning is when you look at the school situation, we have children in schools today, or children who should be in school today, who for a period of a year or more have never seen a smiling child's face.
Right.
That's stunning. They've never seen their friends' faces. And
that's right.
That has got to have some effect on the social development of a child.
Yeah, and I'll say one last thing before we're going on break. I think somebody said that more kids were killed in Chicago because of these shootings than because of COVID.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And nobody
and
wants
to
talk.
They don't want to talk about it.
No, they don't want to talk about it. That's exactly right. We're going to take a little break. We got a lot more to get into with our friend Bill Katz. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Just a quick word here from my friend Carlos Geddes. We play his music on the podcast, and I have a link to his website if you want to get his CD. Great musician from Venezuela who lives here in the Dallas area and just an absolutely wonderful man. He and his wife, Luisa, are just great friends of us. Let's get back to our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, I thought it was something fascinating. The 20th anniversary of 9/11, two things about it really, I guess, hit me. I never thought it would be this way in the 20th anniversary, that the people that we had defeated on the battlefield were putting their flag on Afghanistan, and the President of the United States did not make a speech. I know he recorded something, but not the same thing as standing here in front of the crowd giving a speech. I thought those two things about the celebration really made it different, Bill. You know, somebody said this morning, I was listening to, I think it was Hugh Hewitt, and he said, if you had gone to sleep on the 12th of September 20 years ago and woke up today, you would ask yourself, oh, the Taliban is still in power of Afghanistan? I think it, so that's it, it really, it's just crazy to me, Bill, that we fought this war for 20 years, and what exactly did we get out of it, Bill?
Well, obviously, we got nothing out of it, and in fact, the situation is worse. Not only is the Taliban back in power and in firm power, it has $98 billion worth of American military equipment. I mean, can you imagine the uproar if we gave $98 billion of American military equipment even to an ally of the United States? Just the cost of that. But the Taliban doesn't have to pay for it. They haven't been billed. They will just take it. It's been left behind, and I find it appalling because no matter what kind of chaos may have existed in the withdrawal from Afghanistan, surely the Defense Department knew that equipment is there. Why was that equipment not secured? It wasn't secured in any way. It wasn't kept back in any way. You know, sometimes I wonder if there are, and I'll wonder out loud, we know that the Obama administration was not on the level, that there were people in the administration who didn't particularly like this country, had a certain sympathy for our enemies, for the Muslim world in particular. I wonder if that problem still exists. They're not people who have a certain sympathy for the Taliban, not really caring about their extremist views, but wanting America out of that region so badly that they will help the Taliban. I know it sounds almost crazy. It sounds conspiratorial, but you look at what the administration has done in Afghanistan. They have aided and abetted an enemy of the United States. I don't think there's any question about that. And yet they seem to be hoping that the American people will forget about it before election time.
Well, but I don't think they will, because the incompetence level is so high that that's almost right now, that's almost their biggest problem. It's not so much that how they handled it. It's just the incompetence. They can't seem to one person in the administration says one thing, another person says another thing. I get the feeling just from watching the Secretary of Defense and General Milley that they're not very happy that they got stuck with this. I have no way of proving it, but you just kind of get the feeling, their body language, that they're basically doing their duty and saying what somebody told them to say. But I cannot believe the general, the Secretary of Defense, who I understand fought in Afghanistan, and as he himself said, he left blood there, friends of his. I don't know how anybody who was involved in that war can be happy with the war, the way the war ended. I mean, you could make a rational argument that we should have left or that we had to leave at some point. You can make that argument. I don't agree with that. I think, you know, a couple thousand troops and an air base would have been, for me, the solution. But okay, but I respect people who say we should leave. I have never, I don't hear anybody on either side saying that we should have left the way we did, Bill. And if you're a military man, this is such a disgrace to leave this way, Bill. And maybe
that's why
President Biden didn't speak, because he didn't want to run the risk of maybe people booing him or even some of the Gold Star families turning their back on him. I heard that they did that, although I have not confirmed it, but I heard that that happened. But it seems to me the president wanted to be away as far as he could, Bill, on this day.
That's correct. I think he must understand how unpopular he's becoming with certain groups. And that unpopularity is going to deepen if the economy starts going sour, and there are indications that it might. As far as the military is concerned, you know, it's an American tradition to support the military. But I'm just wondering why there has not been, with the exception of that Marine Lieutenant Colonel who stood up for decency, why there has not been a single resignation of any high-ranking officer over this. You would think an officer who would maybe the chief of staff of one of the services would say, Mr. President, I can't support this and I must resign. It is an honorable thing to do. It is something that officers are encouraged to do if they wish to become involved in politics, and yet not a single resignation. Have we become so career-oriented that anything goes to get that star or to get that position? Maybe we really have deteriorated to that point. But this country has been very badly hurt by what has happened in Afghanistan, because around the world, people wonder whether they can trust us. Now, we may be able to get past this, but there may be another international crisis coming somewhere. And what if we fail again? And that crisis can come over Iran. The Iranians are stonewalling us. They now have a new hardline government, which contains very, very radical people with terrorist ties. And what if we just cave in on the Iran nuclear deal, which apparently is being advocated by the some of the left-wing extremists in the Biden circle, and just cave in and give them everything they want? It could happen. It could happen under this administration. And then I don't know what the president does or says to try to restore his position. I think that Joe Biden may be really a short-term president. Now, he has been elected to serve for 4 years. He is legally entitled to serve for 4 years if he lives. But I don't know if it's going to work out for him. And I think the only thing that's keeping him in office, keeping people from shouting, resign, 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 is the fact that we would have Kamala Harris as president, who is potentially even worse. You know, you know you're in trouble as a country where the only place you can find your vice president is on a milk carton.
Right, right. No, I think you're right. I think that's what's keeping a lot of Democrats from let's say walking over to the Oval Office and saying, "Mr. President, it might be better for you to resign." And she's the one who is keeping them. The other thing too, I've heard this, that if she were to become president, then the Democrats, in a sense, would lose their majority or their potential majority, because there wouldn't be a vice president to break the tie for a while. I mean, she would have to, I guess, appoint or nominate somebody who would have to get through the Congress.
And that would not be a guarantee.
No, that's right. And I think, you know, I remember reading that one of the reasons that the resignation Vice President Ford to become president, I mean, the resignation of President Nixon, I'm saying, that to some extent, everybody knew that Vice President Ford, now President Ford, would get to pick a vice president, that Rockefeller was, I guess, the name, that everybody was comfortable with that move. They weren't, you know, crazy about it, but at least they were comfortable with Rockefeller as vice president. I don't think that's the case right now. And who would she name as vice president? She couldn't go to the left.
Well,
I mean, I don't know.
She could. She could easily. I mean, we've seen in the Democratic Party almost complete irrationality.
Mm-hmm.
The selection of her was irrational. This is a woman who ran for president and was doing so poorly in the polls that she got out of the race before one vote was cast. Later, she was selected as the vice presidential candidate, apparently as part of a deal for the support of Clyburn, and the understanding was that it would be a person of color. This is the cost of identity politics. This is what you get. And she could easily go to the left, and then if the candidate were rejected by the United States Senate, she could scream racism. And I think there could be a demand in the country for the resignation of both Biden and Harris, which would make Nancy Pelosi president. And people could say, well, she's better in the sense that at least she has some experience. You know, that she has some concept of where she is. But assuming, and this is all theoretical, of course, Biden would resign, I don't think he would, but assuming he would resign, she would become president, and then she would nominate somebody who would have to be approved by the Senate. I will check that again. I don't think that both houses are necessary, but that may be a very difficult confirmation. There is now also a possibility that what if she becomes acting president?
Yes.
You know, and takes over as acting president. The president declares himself ill, and she takes over as acting president. She would still hold the vice presidency under those circumstances, under current law, and she would still participate in votes in the United States Senate if the Senate was tied. That could be an extremely interesting situation. I don't know how you work that out constitutionally.
No, well, we've never been here before. I think that's the problem.
No.
I mean, because the 25th Amendment, I haven't read the whole thing, but I don't think it touches on if you have an acting president. I don't think it means that you have an acting vice president or somebody else. It's the whole thing is so darn confusing, but the possibility that both of them would have to resign, I've thought about that too, simply because she is such a unlikable person. I mean, if you're a Democrat running for re-election in 2022 in a competitive district or in the Senate, Georgia, Arizona, or some of these very competitive elections they're going to face, you're not really helping yourself any by having President Kamala Harris coming to campaign for you. I mean, she would be probably worse than President Biden, I would think, Bill.
I think that may be true. I mean, if in fact she did succeed Biden, she would be doing it under circumstances where she does not have the confidence of the American people. This is one area where the European systems are superior, where they have parliamentary systems.
Yes.
If you think of Great Britain, if somebody resigns the prime ministership, the party in power selects the new prime minister. I think it is subject to confirmation of the House of Commons, but it would be automatic because they would be the majority party. But they can do it very quickly. They can do it overnight, actually. And there is one area where I shouldn't say superior to us, but where there are certain advantages to that
mm-hmm.
system. Now, we have a 25th Amendment provision in our Constitution now where the president can be removed for cause, medical cause, where he cannot fulfill the office, and the vice president then becomes acting president. I think the transition to being president is a little more difficult. I'd have to look that up.
Yeah, no, it is, no matter how you look at it, it's not good for the Democrats. That was my point before about saying that I'd rather have the Republican position right now, because no matter how you look at it, it's not good for the Democrats. Something else that is not good for the Democrats is that Senator Manchin appears to be putting his cards on the table. He apparently went home, like a lot of them did, and he was being interviewed over the weekend, and he said when he went home, everybody's talking about inflation and gasoline prices. And I wonder how many other Democrats who went home thinking that everybody was going to be talking about January 6th and everybody was going to be talking about Trump, I wonder how many of them got a real slap in the face when voters said, I don't want to hear about January 6th. I want to hear about gas prices. And I wonder how many of them are coming back to Washington right now, maybe not as excited to support this $3.5 trillion, which I think it's an insanity to spend that kind of money when inflation is up, Bill.
Absolutely. It is insanity, and inflation is up, and we're being warned now that there will be a big jump in inflation, especially in food prices, which really hit people, and that it's coming very soon. That is something that the administration had better get on top of, and they can't
mm-hmm.
because they have a party that wants to spend money as if there's no tomorrow because they feel they only have a short time in which to operate. Now, I found it interesting that Senator Manchin also got substantial flack from AOC, Alexandria
Ocasio-Cortez,
because he referred to her as a young lady, and she is deeply offended by this. Here we are in the middle of national crises, and that is what she's talking about. But this goes to show you that the radicals in the Democratic Party are really the children of the radicals of the 1960s. It's the same mentality. It's that same extremism, that same dislike of the country and contempt for the country. And, of course, Ocasio-Cortez doesn't think that the $3.5 billion is enough, or trillion, excuse me,
mm-hmm.
trillion is enough. It looks as if it's going to go down to defeat in the Senate by one vote. I don't know how it will do in the House. There have to be some Democrats who are offended by it, who understand their constituents will be offended by it. There have to be some. So I don't know if a passage in the House is guaranteed. You know, if it goes down, I don't know if the Senate has, if the House has to vote first on it. All money bills originate in the House, and
mm-hmm.
I think they do have to vote first on it. And the question is, I think for many of the moderate Democrats or those who remain in American politics, you know, do I offend my constituents or do I offend Nancy Pelosi? And that's, for a Democrat, that's a tough decision.
It is, because, again, just like I was saying, I mean, I'm sure that Senator Manchin is not the only politician, Democrat or Republican, who went home and didn't hear about gasoline prices and inflation. I mean, when you're talking about food and when you're talking about gasoline prices, that's right to the middle-class family budget. I mean, you know, when you're talking
right.
about infrastructure in the abstract, I guess that's one thing. But when people go to the store or they put gas in their car, they know exactly what's going on, Bill. I mean, I saw gasoline yesterday. I was driving, and the gasoline is $2.99. And that's Texas,
yes.
$2.99. And then I saw that the national average is over $3. That's in a year's time. And more than that, I think, right?
We live, it's about $3.50.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, if I just think of Texas alone. I mean, because that's all I know. In January, it was 217, something like that. And now it's anywhere between 285 and 299. That's an increase of, what, 70 cents a gallon? That's a big jump. I mean, you multiply that times 12 gallons, that's whatever it is, $8.
That's a meal.
That's going out to eat. I mean, and then on top of that, the food. I've got to think that there's some Democrats who are thinking about all this and saying, hey, wait a minute, that's what matters to me. My constituents talking about inflation. The $3.5 trillion, that used to be the size of the federal government, Bill, not long ago. The whole budget was $3.5 trillion. And here we're talking about increasing it 3.5. It's crazy.
Well, you know, you make a very good point. Members of Congress go home to their constituents, but I cannot believe that they can then come back and just vote for this thing, this monstrosity.
Mm-hmm.
It was pointed out, I think, by Doug Schoen a few days ago, that one of the reasons that the Democrats lost the Congress in 1994. Was because of a spending bill that they that the public disagreed with, and that this is a very common situation. It's a common situation even at the local level when financing initiatives are voted on by the people. They often turn them down because they just don't want government spending that much money. And here government is spending in ways that they have never spent before. And some of the provisions that are beginning to come out and be recognized by the public are typical hack politician, let me take care of my local group initiatives. Some benefit labor unions, some benefit others. They may actually be, you know, well meant and well mentioned, but the fact is the American people, I think, are catching on to the fact that you cannot keep spending money like this.
Well, no, yeah. I mean, and they're seeing the inflation. And I think that's the easiest way for them to realize that this is not working. Well, it seems to me, Bill, that the Department of Justice wants to declare war on Texas. You know, first of all, the abortion law or the heartbeat law. And now with DACA, they're going after. And I actually think that they've made a mistake in going after the heartbeat law this early. There was a great analysis of what the federal government could do over at Powerline, where one of those attorneys over
yes.
there was saying that they may come out looking foolish because the Supreme Court may very well say one more time, we're not going to touch it right now. And if that happens, that's going to make a lot of people in the left very angry, but they may very well say that simply because
yes.
the case, you know, people can argue about the heartbeat law all they want, but it is the choice that the people in Texas made. And looking at some polling data, Rasmussen has a poll recently that it's 46 in support, 43 against it, and that's national. And frankly, I thought it would be worse than that. If that's what it is,
yes,
then you know, maybe it's not too bad.
I would have thought it would be worse than that also. I mean, I'm very surprised at those numbers.
Yeah, and I saw that because I expected the public I mean, I expected, given everything I was hearing, I mean, Wendy Davis, remember Wendy Davis from years back, the lady who ran for governor, and
the tennis
there was a joke. Yeah, that's right. Well, there was a joke around here that the lady who believed in abortion after 20 weeks went down by 20 points. That was the joke in Texas. But she's actually a very smart lady. I mean, I just picked the wrong issue to run on. But she's a smart lady, and I thought she would have I thought she would make better choices because she is a telegenic lady who I think could do well in politics. I hope she's not offended that I call her a lady.
That's horrible.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's amazing that AOC is offended by that, but not offended by the fact that the Taliban, the most misogynist organization in the world, has taken over Afghanistan. That doesn't offend her at all. The hypocrisy flows. It just flows.
But Wendy Davis was saying, just to get back to Wendy Davis for a second, she was saying the other day that 70% of the public supports Roe v. Wade, and that may be true. But the law coming out of Texas or the one out of Mississippi is not invalidating Roe v. Wade. It's simply regulating abortion. And whether you believe it should be weeks or, I mean, whatever regulation you believe in, it doesn't do away with Roe v. Wade. And I think my sense is that a lot more people are saying, yes, a woman has the right to an abortion, but the state can regulate abortion. I think that's where the compromise is, and that's where we're going. And if we go that way, Bill, I'll be happy with that.
Well, I think I would be too. But, you know, I think you're right that they jumped the gun in the denunciations, and even Joe Biden had to get in and call the law un-American. I don't know.
I love that.
I don't know what he's talking. I don't know what he's talking about. But the Supreme Court made it very plain in their action thus far that they have not taken up the substance of the law. And you would think that the opponents would understand that and wait for the court to act. Now they say, "Well, damage is being done." Yes, I guess if you're pro-abortion, damage is being done. But I think this kind of law was inevitable given the extremes to which we were going. Americans don't realize that we are actually one of the outlier countries on the subject of abortion. And many of the European countries that they used to call progressive have actually become more conservative on the subject. You'll notice that the pro-abortion or pro-choice, as they call themselves, crowd never mentions Europe any longer. The reason is Europe began to regulate abortion more severely than we do, and so they don't mention it.
Yes. No, and that's why I've always felt that there ought to be a compromise. I mean, there ought to be a window for a woman who wants to have an abortion. You're never going to be able to close that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there ought to be at least the regulation of it, if for no other reason than it is a medical operation. Now, there is an interesting story going around Texas that people are now going to go to Mexico for abortions because
they used to go for divorces.
I know, that's what I mean. So I was, you know, when a friend told me that, I said, well, that would be a great source of dollars for Mexico, you know, for Mexico to become a clinic, you know. But all they got to do is, I mean, they will have abortion tourism. I guess that will be the name of the new industry in Mexico. But anyway, I think it's going to be interesting. The fellow who wrote the heartbeat law has an article or an opinion piece at the Wall Street Journal today. I would recommend that you check that, Bill, because what he's saying is in many ways, you know, this is what happens when you take it away from people. Eventually, people are going to bring it back. And that's the great mistake of Roe v. Wade, was to take it from the voters. And now the voters are saying,
that's
we want
true.
Something to say, and we're going to force our way to say it. That's kind of what he says in that article. Very interesting. He is a state senator.
Even Ruth Ginsburg said that she had wished Roe would have been done through the states, not to the Supreme Court, because you're right. On an issue as profound as this, the people want to have a say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One quick question, Bill, as we wrap it up. This is going to be – there's so many things this week to look forward to. So tell me a couple of things you'll be looking forward to this week. I know the recall, of course, will be one of them. But anything else that you'll be looking at?
Well, I will be looking at Joe Biden.
Yes.
And what he does after this disastrous month that he has. Mm. And you remember, there is also a 2021 election.
Yes.
A day in November. A number of races will be decided, I think, including the race in Virginia, which is the most important. And I will be looking to see how these races are beginning to shape up. Now you're going to be getting polls that have some meaning. I hope you're right about Virginia. I have not seen the latest numbers on Virginia because the governorship is a very, very contended office, and it's a state that has been drifting Democratic. But if we can make progress there, that would be fantastic. There will be some special elections. There will be local elections. I think it's going to be a very important political season. There will be indicators. New York may, for example, New York City may go from a progressive Democrat, a real lefty Democrat, de Blasio, or really a socialist, to a more moderate Democrat in Eric Adams. And let's see what happens there. So I'll be looking at the politics, obviously. We must continue to look at foreign policy, where we are doing very poorly around
yes.
the world, not just in Afghanistan, but we are not making the kind of arguments that we need to make. And I'm deeply concerned about the possibility that the Chinese may make a move on Taiwan at the very time when America is down. And I don't know what the president would do. I don't think anybody does.
Well, speaking of that, I heard over the weekend something I didn't know, that we do not have a defense treaty with Taiwan. So technically,
no, we
we're not supposed to defend them. It would
well,
look bad if
we
didn't defend them, but we don't have to.
We're not obligated. We're
yes.
not obligated to.
It's not like they're
and
NATO.
That's my fear is that if the Chinese make a move, Biden's response will be, well, we don't have a military defense
right.
treaty with Taiwan. We're not obligated, but we will take certain actions because we're angry about this. We are going to sanction a school teacher in Beijing for what she's done, and that will show them. I mean,
right.
we're going to show them. But I think that if they wanted to take Taiwan right now, I think it would be a bit of battle. Taiwan has a military force.
Right, right.
But I think they would succeed.
Well, that's what they were saying, that the Taiwanese are not going to go down easy. The Chinese do – it would have to be pretty bloody, but the Chinese, I guess, would be willing to do it. But we'll see. I think that's the big wild card. I mean, that's the big story out there that could change everything and would make the Biden administration look so bad, especially after Afghanistan, because had Afghanistan finished differently, the message would have been different to the leaders of Taiwan, I mean, the leaders of China and the leaders of Iran. So we'll keep an eye on that, Bill. And I just saw Rasmussen. It is 46-43 in favor of the Texas abortion law. So maybe, I mean, that's something that surprised me. I sent you the copy of the article so you can see it. Have a great week, Bill, and look forward to the next
yes.
time when I'm sure we'll be talking about Joe Biden.
I think we will, and for many weeks after that. Keep up with the news. It's very difficult. It goes hour by hour, but keep up with the news.
Thank you so much, Bill. Have a wonderful day and great work at Urgent Agenda, as always.
Thank you. Thank
All
you.
Right. Our good friend, Bill Katz. Yeah, our good friend, I think I just cut him off without realizing it. Our good friend, Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, we always recommend it. Check out his website. Have a wonderful day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.